Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie. Summer has come on. The raspberries are ripe. There are hummingbirds everywhere. It's been getting warm and humid here. We had a couple of big storms this last week. Knocked out power on Sunday night and part of Monday as well. People sitting in candlelight and thinking simpler thoughts down at the sidetrack tap. Wally had dug out a case of mead that somebody had bought at a Renaissance fair somewhere. Fermented honey, and he passed it around, and the old soaks there in the sidetrack tap sat and drank glass after glass of fermented mead. They'd never had it before, and after a while, they couldn't remember anything anyway, so they all sort of collapsed against each other, and they looked like a painting, a medieval painting by Bruegel of peasants at a party, all sleeping on top of each other. The French Impressionists didn't paint drunks if they could help it. American painters haven't painted drunks, but medieval painters did because everybody was drunk all the time. So they didn't have much choice. It was a dark period in my town's history, and now nobody is talking about it whatsoever. If it had been any hotter and more humid and gone on longer, then you might have seen people rolling around on the floor at the Lutheran church and whooping and yelling and handling snakes and breaking the bounds of decency, seen people stopping at farmhouses on the way home to buy a couple of fruit jars full of corn liquor and bring it home and fry up a possum or two. But it didn't get that hot. It wasn't that humid. The children are home from school, high school kids and college kids as well, and so it's a good time for parents to just shut up and not say what you're thinking. Just not say anything, and there is so much not to say. Kids go out and they work part-time for a few hours a day, and then they come home and they watch YouTube videos of cats walking into storm doors, and the cats looked sort of alarmed, and then they go back the same way. They figured maybe they just came out at the wrong angle or something. And they watch horses in parade, videos of horses in parades who stop and raise their tails and drop an astonishing volume of horse flop. And kids sit and watch these YouTube videos long periods of time, and then they're bored. There's nothing to do. They're desperately bored. How can you be bored? There's a whole world out there, all these things to do. There's life to be lived. That's what you should not say. That's what you do not say. My father was a carpenter, and he admired people who came early and got the job done and stayed around until it was done. He admired people who embraced work. But I am on the kid's side. I think that laziness is a real talent, and it has to be developed when you're young. I admire people who embrace the pillow on the couch out on the porch and who hold onto it and who listen to the ice as it gently melts in the glass of lemonade on the floor and who work up the ambition to reach down and pick up that glass and have a sip of lemonade. I admire lazy people, and I am doing my very best to be one of them. I come from a state, however, where there are all of these ambitious Swedes and Germans who observe a very high standard of lawn care. And so if you're a normal person and your yard is raggedy and you don't mow, because, I mean, if God had wanted it to be mowed, he would have kept it short. And you have explaining to do, and if you're just lying around, you easily feel shame and embarrassment among these industrious Swedes and Germans who have all these schemes for civic improvement and who look on inertia as a moral fault instead of a state of nature. You need a good cover story if you are going to be a lazy person. And here is a perfect cover story. I'm working on a book. That's all you need. You work on a book up in your head. You can work on it lying on a couch on your screen porch. You just have a legal pad out there, and every so often you pick it up and you write a sentence, and then you think about it some more, and then you cross out that sentence. And there's no need to show anything, explain anything to anybody. You're working on a book. This is a respectable state in life. And if people ask you, how's it coming? You say, well, it's coming slowly. And after 10 years, they say, well, what about that book that you're working on? You say, well, I looked at it and it wasn't, and I threw it away. And they commiserate with you. All of that work for nothing. So you have an excuse for 10 years, and then you win people's pity. It doesn't get any better than that. It's perfect. Working on a book. Some people worry about the country. Some people worry about national security. I have always left national security in the hands of Joe and Frank Hardy, sons of Fenton Hardy, the detective, the Hardy boys, who, with their fast roadster and their speedboat, protected our country against saboteurs and against spies. The country is in good hands with the Hardy boys, if you ask me, and I have nothing to add to that. My wife is ambitious. My wife, goodness gracious, how did that ever come out of my mouth? My wife is ambitious, and she wants to travel, she wants to go see things, she wants to engage the world, she wants to have experiences, but I've done that already. I've been to Australia, a miserable, miserable trip. You either need medications that you really don't want to take in order to fly 15 hours nonstop to Sydney, or else you have to buy a first-class ticket for the price of a three-bedroom Rambler. So you sit in economy, you're like a prisoner in stocks. It's just such misery, and you can't think of anything else while you're there except the return trip home and the suffering. I've been to Barbados. I'm not a beach person. I lay on the beach for 10 minutes, and I turn red, and I open the door to a world of pain, of sunburn. I was like a boy in a bubble. I just tried not to let my skin come in contact with any other physical object whatsoever. I've done these things. I've been to the Faroe Islands. What a miserable time that was. No trees. The people sunk in gloom all of the time. Bored, nothing to do. And the worst of all, I've gone camping up in the Boundary Waters canoe area in northern Minnesota. What a time that was. Eat freeze-dried food out of plastic bags that turns to stone in your bowels. Walk around with this heavy weight that you know what it's going to be like coming out. It'll be like defecating building materials. And you see jet airlines going high overhead in the sky, silver things in the sky, and you think to yourself, those people have toilets up there. They have toilets. And then to be with the master woodsman, every canoe trip has a master woodsman who will show you the correct way to paddle a canoe, who knows the correct way to tie knots. This is the song leader, the great helmsman as well. This is the man who tries to keep your spirits up, and by the end of a week, you just want to kill him. No, it's miserable. Your body aches. Your body aches from lying on the ground and clouds of mosquitoes and deer flies who are hungry for white blood to avenge what we did to the Ojibwe. And it's a horrendous, horrendous experience to have. I live in a city, St. Paul, where there are no bears to worry about, and where I have this lovely, lovely screened porch. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I don't need to live on freeze-dried food. I can sleep in a bed. Why would I ever want anything else? See, there's no answer to that question. No, I'm on the side of the kids who are learning beautiful habits of laziness. I lie there on my couch in my screened porch, and I listen to the lawnmower. I hire college students who are film studies majors to cut my lawn, and I lie there. It's amazing how long you can lie. You think you'd feel guilty, but you wait and you wait, and it doesn't come. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, all the children are the daddies.